T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's After Six. Joining us once again, Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey Tucker joins us on a regular basis because he is so much fun to talk to. He's with AIER, American Institute for Economic Research. Jeffrey Tucker, welcome back.
Hey, it's so good to be here, Todd. Thank you. It's been a while, I think.
Yeah, so while you were gone, the World Health Organization was trying to destroy whatever bit of credibility it might have had left in the eyes of Americans, if not the rest of the world. They pulled a fast one on us this week, and I'm left undecided whether I'm supposed to believe the first thing they said about COVID and the asymptomatic passing it on from one person to the other, or the second thing, or the third thing. Can you explain?
Yeah, so I think what happened is that now that the lockdowns are coming to an end, we're starting to see a little bit more truth coming out. For 3 months, we've been lied to unrelentingly because the politicians locked down the economy, so they had to come up with a justification for it. Initially, it was to preserve hospital capacity, as you recall, and then that turned out not to be an issue. There was maybe one or two hospitals in the country that were at full capacity for about 24, 48 hours. Apart from that, everything emptied out because they got rid of all elective surgeries, and people were scared to go to the doctor all through the lockdown. So, you know, it bankrupted, you know, hundreds of hospitals, at least 250 hospitals furloughed workers. The thing about the truth is you can't suppress it for forever. So things are starting to chill a little bit. And so a top doctor epidemiologist at the World Health Organization said in passing at a press conference that it's very rare for COVID to be passed asymptomatically. Now, why does that matter? It mattered because after the excuse for the hospital capacity went away, we were still under lockdown, stay-at-home orders, social distancing, hopping around like grasshoppers with masks on and so on. The reason that was given at the time was, well, a lot of people have it, maybe 30%, maybe 60% have it without symptoms, but you can still pass it on. So it still makes you may not be feeling bad, you may not be sneezing, coughing, but if you touch somebody or get close to them, you could pass it on, and then that person could die, and that makes you a murderer, right? So that was the sort of the rationale. So they flipped it. You know, it's about week two of the lockdown. They flipped it from curve flattening for the hospitals to just stay away from everybody because anybody could have it, anybody could infect anybody. Well, that would be a very unusual coronavirus because, you know, our parents knew, you know, our grandparents know that generally with colds, you know, you don't want to sneeze at somebody, you don't want to cough on them, and so if you've got a sneezing and coughing, it's good to cover your mouth and like that. But if you're feeling fine, then everything, you should go about your business. That's just the way life is. So that's what she said. She said, as far as we can tell, there haven't been a lot of studies on it, but as far as we can tell, it's very rare. Okay.
That was the statement this week on what,
yeah,
Monday or?
Yeah. It was Monday. I think it was Monday, yeah. And so then that went viral all over the world, so to speak. And people were like, wait, why did we lock down? Why did we destroy our lives? Why did we destroy our economies? Why are we still wearing masks? You know, why are the schools closed? How come we can't go to sports events? Why are the theaters not open then? If this is just another normal virus, like a cold, that's kind of wicked on some people, but you can only pass it on if you're actually showing symptoms, then...
Well, let me just jump in for a second, Jeffrey, and explain this even sharper than you are. And that is that that one of the things that scared a lot of older citizens, I think, was the idea that they had to go into seclusion and avoid their grandchildren, and that any young person you would look at, if you were an older person, say over 60, you'd look at them as a stealth killer. You just had no way of knowing how dangerous this person was. And that idea that you couldn't know who the person was carrying the deadly weapon made it a really scary moment and allowed people to go along with this whole shutdown concept. Yeah, and that without was, that, the average person could just say, okay, I can manage this myself. I can decide to stay away from people who are sneezing or sick or might be sneezing and sick, and otherwise we're fine.
Yep. In other words, it was just a normal virus, right? But instead, we got this line that this is a mysterious visitor from another planet that you could stealthily be passing on to people. You could be killing people without intention. So the only way to stay safe is to stay 6 feet apart with a mask, shut down your business, don't go to church, and so on. So that became asymptomatic transmission, became a very, very important way to justify what they had already done, which was initially justified all the thing in the name of curve flattening in order to preserve hospital capacity. Suddenly that shifted to asymptomatic transmission. So when the World Health Organization said in a moment of truth that they really don't have any evidence of this asymptomatic transfer, and that the evidence they do have would suggest it's very rare, suddenly everything just blew up and people got confirmed what they had always suspected, which is that there's some shenanigans going on here.
Wait a sec. How do you come to the conclusion on shenanigans? Is that based on simply saying, okay, the flow of money for this organization comes from nations like primarily the United States, which has invested heavily, its politicians have invested heavily in the idea that this is a hazardous moment that requires government intervention and destruction of the economy in order to save the people. And no organization they're funding can get away with undermining that premise. Is that the deductive thinking you're doing to make the claim you're making?
So I think what's going on at the World Health Organization is that it's filled with a lot of scientists, and science is an uncertain process of discovery. So, and people have different opinions about different things. People have different risk assessments about what this disease is, where it came from, how to mitigate it, whether there can be a vaccine, and so on. This is why at the very beginning the World Health Organization came out for the China strategy of the totalitarian medieval-style crushing of everybody, and then later, you know, 2 months later, said, well, actually, Sweden had it right. Well, Sweden didn't do anything. You know, they canceled events over 500 people. Otherwise, the whole economy continued to function. So they said, well, Sweden's the right way. So now that's completely contradictory. So they flip-flopped on all these issues, mainly because it's a scientific organization, and to their credit, science is adaptable, and science is uncertain, science is this and that. But governments, on the other hand, have to act as all the time as if they're acting on certain information, right?
Yes, so, yes. They need certainty in order to make long-term planning decisions, and that requires a fearful public that's pliable enough to do what's told. So doesn't that force the WHO to be an agent of the political rather than the scientific?
It always has been, and you saw that happening this week. So we have this very nice doctor making the point that they don't have a lot of studies on this because it turns out contact tracing is extremely difficult, unlike in the movies. It's almost a pseudoscience in real life. You don't know where you got a virus. There's no way. Now, you may suspect it, but you can't know for sure. And so contact tracing is almost impossible in real life. So they can't really document asymptomatic passage, but the little bit that has been documented, it shows that it's extremely rare. She saw that, and then suddenly it became a political problem for governments all over the world. So they were demanding a retraction. So the retraction came the next day, but it wasn't even a retraction. What they said was, the truth is, we don't know. We don't know for sure that it's very rare, but we don't know that it may in fact be very rare. We have not enough studies.
Well, but that's even undermining them further. Why did they say the same day before that it's rare and then have to back off of that? It's either rare, not rare, or they don't know.
And the answer is that they don't know. And I think a good common sense answer that your mother would give is that, oh, the coronavirus is related to the cold. I know about colds. You pass them on, we sneeze on people. I mean, that's what our intuition about viruses says. So that's why it connected so deeply with people. We were being told for months that this is a mysterious visitor from another planet, unusually deadly and horrifying, and that anybody could pass it on and kill people stealthily even though they have no symptoms. It turns out, and this is what my takeaway from everything that's happened at the World Health Organization this week, it turns out we don't have any evidence that that is the case. And that there is a little bit of evidence to suggest that this is just like any other virus. But they got pilloried for that because governments around the world said, look, if you keep saying this, you're going to discredit everything that's happened to this country and all countries for the last 3 months. And that's a problem. It became a political problem. And so
yes.
much of political
and by the way, we control your funding is the subtext there, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Donald Trump has already been talking about not sending them money anymore. We're talking to Jeffrey
that's
Tucker
right.
from AIER. So, yeah, go ahead, finish that conversation. And
yeah,
then there's one other thing I just want to push in, though, Jeffrey, and that is the idea that this was also supposed to be a way more deadly pandemic than it turned out to be in the United States, even though we've gotten the worst of it, supposedly. But we're dealing with 1 to 200,000 maybe eventual deaths versus the 1 to 2 million that they told us. Is that directly tied, do you think, by models that were thrown off track by this asymptomatic spread idea?
Well, the models are all these agent-based models, and you can make the model say anything that you want it to say, depending on the assumptions that you bake into that. And look, Todd, it's even worse than what you say. On February 28th, the New York Times ran a podcast, so I don't know, the very first mention of the media that was totally over the top hysterical. They said that in this pandemic, 8.2 million Americans will die. Six of your friends are going to die. They said that on February 28th, the New York Times. And I went back and listened to that transcript and followed it really carefully. On what basis were they saying that? Not even on based on a model. It's because the reporter, Daniel McNeil, who has a degree in rhetoric from Berkeley, said everything he knows about this virus reminds him of the 1918 Spanish flu. Reminds him. That was it. That was his evidence.
Oh, so a little post-traumatic stress was being triggered inside of him that was bringing him back in time.
Something like that. 8.25 million dead, he predicted. So this is the New York Times, you know, sober voice of public calm, right? Used to be. You know, in 1956, they said everybody stay calm, let the medical professionals handle it. In 1968, they paid almost no attention. So this podcast that's listened to by Mina Dye, and the only way to stop that is to lock down completely. Stay at home, shut your businesses, close your churches, shut the schools, shut down sports, don't go to restaurants, lock down completely, and basically go live in a refrigerator box for the next month. That's what he said. So,
wow.
You know, but this is a scandal. When you have New York Times and 46 governors, whatever it is, advocating basically pushing and implementing a totalitarian police state practically overnight, it's going to be difficult for them to admit that they're wrong. And that's the stage of history we're in right now.
Okay, so that leads us in a pretty cynical place, but a practical one at the same time. And that is we have to look at our governmental systems and say where there is incentive for there to be certain results in order to control the people, that those results will be delivered on a silver platter. And that's the situation you're describing. But the premise for this that provides it some legitimacy is that someday there will be, perhaps, a virus that is so dangerous that it would require the government to be able to whip everybody into shape and have them jump on a dime into total seclusion and social isolation. How do we reconcile those two things? Should we never? I've come to the point where I would just never. I figure the risk is in that one in a million, if you really need the government to protect you, well, so what? It's not worth the gamble because they'll take advantage of you every time in between now and then.
Well, that's right. And the CDC is very interesting. In 2007, they put together this plan for how to handle pandemics. And they have charts, and they're like, okay, if the pandemic is mild, you don't have to really do anything. If it's moderate, you might have to close the schools. If it's severe, you might have to close businesses. If it's extreme, you might have to have full stay-at-home lockdown orders, okay? This is what the CDC said in 2006. I don't think they ever should have said that. But here's what's missing from that plan. When the pandemic comes, you don't actually know if it's mild, moderate, severe, or extreme. You don't know that except when you look back in time and you can examine things like infection fatality rates, case fatality rates, death rates, demographics of death, and that sort of thing. Well, it turns out by any standard this would be, I don't want to characterize it as mild, moderate, whatever. I don't want to do that. I think it's even too early to do that. But the whole CDC plan for lockdown presumed that this was the most extreme form of pandemic you could ever have without any evidence. We had plenty of evidence that it was dangerous in nursing homes, but that's it.
One other part of that plan bothers me, and the other part of that plan is it requires that all 50 states also get, that all those governors get corralled by the CDC or the president or whoever's pulling the strings when one of these things is being instituted, that the federal epidemiologists, et cetera, are telling all the state epidemiologists, uh-oh, look out, this is the big one. You know, it's like the head weatherman for the country is telling all the little weathermen in their local markets around the country that they have to tell everybody, this is the big one, shelter in place. And that is the most dangerous thing politically. And we see now how ridiculous it is. We see now how much they've overreacted. And also we see how placid the average American is once whipped into a frenzy. It's tough to get them out of their the fetal position.
Well, I think after 3 months, everybody got fed up and went out on the streets and just started screaming and yelling and doing whatever they could, just because it's just a statement of, look, I'm a free person. So I don't know how much the American people really went along with this. Nobody asked them. But what you describe with the CDC, with their health officials, talking to the health officials at state level and everything like that, and a state of panic, that is precisely what happened throughout March, throughout February and March, precisely. And they got increased. They had an email list, a stupid, old-fashioned email list on which they kept adding officials, adding government officials, adding doctors, adding computer scientists, and so on. And it reached a state of frenzy by March 12th, when Carter Meacher from the Veterans Administration sent out his memo to shut down all schools immediately. That, and he said, pull the trigger now. Pull the trigger. That memo whipped everybody up into a state of absolute fear, you know, driving out rationality, driving out caution, driving out the Constitution, driving out human rights, you know. Suddenly we were all part of their computer game. We were all playing SimCity, you know, and we had to obey them. And it was driven by fear and panic and irrationality, and not a concern for medicine or experience or decency or human decency, much less the Constitution, Bill of Rights.
Let me break in 1 second. I never say it enough. We're talking to Jeffrey Tucker from AIER.org. He's a wonderful writer there, a wonderful thinker, and it's great to share ideas each week or two whenever we get together. So what are we as Americans? To me, the lesson here is we have to not trust big government to make any kinds of decisions like these for us, even in situations where there is nobody else who can do it except big government.
I agree with that. In the end, we are better managers of our lives than government, and doctors are better mitigators of disease than politicians. So if you're sick, go to the doctor, stay home, try not to infect other people. This is common sense stuff. We've always known this. And so it's disgusting that they overrode us with what was really amounted to a huge social experiment. Never tried.
Yeah, but don't say it. Don't say it just in past tense. This continues. The governor of Connecticut is about halfway through, almost halfway through, a six-month emergency declaration in which he is King Ned. He can basically do what he wants to do. There is no democratic system in place for running the state. That is a horrible thing.
It's a horrible thing, and, you know, I live in Massachusetts, so we're dealing with something very similar now. I have to, you know, endure these endless press conferences by this governor who knows absolutely nothing about medicine, but is, in any case, absolutely sure that everything he's doing is correct, and so every day businesses are still shut down, and everybody's forced to cover their face. We're walking around like the Taliban over here in Massachusetts for apparently no reason whatsoever. But these guys have lacked all humility, and they have to pretend to know things that they don't know.
Yes. They are so good at being frauds, too.
Yeah, they're so good at it. I hope that voters are paying attention. I really have to believe, Todd, that there's going to be long-term political change in this country in light of what happened. I don't think that you can just suddenly change the subject from coronavirus to race and expect people to forget what's happened over the last 3 months.
Make it very specific. What happens if there is a second wave? To me, they've done us another disservice, a double disservice, because if there is now a situation in which we would actually benefit from believing them, they've blown their chance.
That is for sure. I think even an asteroid hitting the planet, you know, nobody's going to believe it at this point. Because the death rates are not showing anything remotely justifying what's happened to us. What we've put up with over the last 3 months, God bless the American people. I mean, this has just been absolutely miserable. And I hope, what I would like to see, Todd, and I'm not a big political guy, as you know, but I think that if the elections this November are about anything, that every one of these guys should be pressed to say, never again lockdown, you know, release their position on lockdowns. Was it a good idea? Was it not idea? If you did lockdown, do you think it was a mistake? What are you going to do next time around? And anybody who shows any friendliness to the idea that the Constitution doesn't matter at all, and that you're just a player in a game, and they can muscle you like that, people should just vote against them. Doesn't matter what the party. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me, Republican, Democrat.
Right, right.
Lockdown.
But this
is
what concerns me. I just have not seen this kind of bristling impatience from restaurant owners, restaurant owners are sitting there trying to do outdoor dining in Connecticut and other states where they're lucky, waiting for the indoor dining to come along as if there's some difference between sitting five tables outside and seating five tables inside while keeping them all 12 feet away from each other.
It's all preposterous, not to mention the fact that we were all forced inside for 2 months and we weren't allowed to go outside, and now we're only allowed to go eat outside and not allowed to eat inside. What do we think? What is this? Coronavirus, a migratory animal that it was hiding outside. You know, it couldn't find us for 2 months because we were hiding inside, and then it did find us, and so now we have to go outside, and it's confused again. Like, what are we thinking here? None of this makes any sense. This is all a bunch of silly, silly, ridiculous politicians pretending those things that they don't know. And look, American people are not stupid. They're onto the racket by now, and they know that these people have no idea what they're talking about. And I hope there will be no forgiveness and no forgetting.
Oh, me too.
Either.
Yeah.
No forgetting.
All right, Jeffrey Tucker. I see a bumper sticker developing here.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
Jeffrey Tucker from AIER.org. Check out his writing there. World Health Organization walks back claim about asymptomatic spread. Jeffrey, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you, sir.
All the best, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's it for this half hour of After 6. Stay with us. Michael Leibowitz coming up after news on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.